Hey guys, and welcome to episode 248 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now in this episode, I interview Katie Marciniak, and in it, I chat with Katie about her OCD story, how seeing a school shooting on TV triggered her harm worries, going to get professional help, relationship worries that focused on her marriage, finding an OCD specialist and how that helped her, learning to face the things she was avoiding for years, working on a fear of getting pregnant, the process of recovery, how her husband helps her, working hard at self-compassion, words of hope, and much, much more. And a quick shout out for our podcast partners, NoCD. NoCD Therapy matches you with a licensed therapist trained to treat OCD, offers a personalized treatment plan delivered through face-to-face video sessions. Between therapy sessions, you can use their therapeutic tools in the app 24/7. Message your therapist and learn what helps other people in their OCD peer community. To find out more, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. So thank you to Katie for her time and of course to you guys for listening. And without further ado, here she is. On the podcast today, I have Katie Marciniak, who has kindly agreed to share her OCD story with us. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And as you know, I like to hear people's OCD stories. So, you know, the floor is yours. As little, as much detail. It'd be good to hear it.
All right. Sounds good. So, I don't know, my OCD story started a while ago. I always find it hard to pack it into a concise story. But at first onset, like around the age of 12, I had been watching a news event about a school shooting in the U.S., the Columbine school shooting. And after that, I started to have some really intense thoughts related to violence and harm. And I did not know what was happening. It was a really hard time for me. And the thoughts really overwhelmed me, and I didn't know how to make sense of it in my head. You know, with that came a lot of compulsions of trying to get rid of those thoughts and wondering if I was a horrible person. And it kept going and going and going, and build up this intensity for me. And it was something that at the time, it really felt like one day my life just changed like drastically. Like I was growing up in this great family, had a lot of things going for me. And all of a sudden, like my brain just stopped working the right way. And that's like the best way I can describe it. I just remember always, I wish I could go back to the way it was. And for a while, I kind of just dealt with those thoughts by myself. I didn't know what was happening. I kind of internalized them. It brought on a lot of self-hate. And there did come a point where I started to like vaguely tell my parents about them in like a very, now I know, reassurance-seeking way, asking if I was a good person, but never like fully disclosing the intensity of the thought or the graphic nature of them or how they made me feel. And you know, at the time my parents kind of saw that I was struggling and they offered to take me somewhere to seek help, but it just, there was a lot of stigma back then. And I could see no path to explaining what was happening in my brain, especially, you know, there was just a school shooting. So I don't want to be that kid that's going to go to the therapist and be like, I'm having these really violent thoughts out of the fear that they're going to say, oh yeah, you're the next one. Like it's going to happen. You're going to be taken away. And like my worst fear was just to be, you know, taken to like a psych ward and not let out. So I didn't go to therapy, and I struggled for a very long time. And I never fully revealed to my parents what was happening. And then eventually the thoughts kind of, they toned down. Like, I think the compulsions were always there, but the intensity of the thoughts kind of, they took a break for a while. And now looking back, I know they didn't really take a break. My OCD just moved on to like the next content area. But the compulsions always stuck with me all the way until I ended up getting therapy years and years later. So after like that age of 12, I didn't go to therapy for a while. I went through high school. I got to college. It wasn't until I was in grad school, like around the age of 23, and I was working at like a grad assistantship, and I found myself struggling in ways that I just knew weren't normal, for lack of a better word. I was checking things constantly. The compulsions were just getting really intense with stuff. And I somehow thought to myself, like, all right, I'm gonna look this up. I'm gonna Google it. And I don't know why I never did that before. I think I was afraid what I was gonna find out. And I came across like the IOCDF's website, and I started reading, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is me. Like, definitely, like, there's a diagnosable reason why I've struggled for so long. And especially once I read about the harm thoughts, I was like, there was such a sense of relief for knowing there was a reason that it was happening, that wasn't just like, at my core, I was a horrible person. And after I read about the harm, I started reading about all the other parts of OCD, and I really, like, I mean, I checked almost like all the boxes. And I did start to realize, like, it wasn't that the harm stuff went away. The content was just like morphing through my life. And I really have taken, I've jumped from content to content to content. So after I kind of realized that I might have OCD and kind of self-diagnosed myself, this was so hard for me, but I finally like went and asked for some help. And you know, the first person that I saw, she did diagnose me, confirmed my own self-diagnosis. And then we worked through some ERP. Like, she did have some knowledge of ERP, and we worked through kind of like some of my surface level obsessions, the ones that didn't really scare me. But they were still interfering with my life. And so I kind of had that therapy experience where I realized it could kind of work, but I also knew I still didn't like to go. I didn't want to be there. It just wasn't this fulfilling thing for me. And around that time, I had actually met my husband, and my life kind of like focused on that, and everything felt really good. It kind of felt like I had this like baggage with me that I just didn't want to like look at.
Yeah.
But I was really enjoying like this new relationship. And then we eventually got married. And I kind of just pushed that OCD stuff aside. And I mean, I never really did. I just told myself I did. And my husband and I always had an agreement. Like, I was open about my experiences in the past, that if I ever really struggled, he would say something, or I would be the one that would take myself back to therapy. And it was shortly after we got married that I really relationship OCD like hit me hard. Like, I mean, I think it kind of was a little before I got married, but it wasn't like this thing that really interfered in that way. But it like seeped through the cracks. And at the time, I could recognize that there was a cycle to it. Like, there's obsessions, and there was a lot of ruminating and a lot of Googling, and it felt like OCD, but I could not find like much content on like the internet or resources in terms of like that obsession, which then like fed my OCD. Like, oh, maybe it's not OCD. Maybe I don't really love my husband. But I knew the way I felt, and like, I had dealt with OCD for so long that gut punch, like, it just felt like OCD. But it really like, it got me good. And I was in like horrible cycles with it, and, you know, ruminating all the time, and would just feel, I would get like mini panic attacks, like every time I went out to eat with my husband, which used to be like this very like joy filled thing. Like, we liked going places, trying new things. And I found myself just physically anxious all the time, or, you know, at home when we were watching a movie. It really got me that I would have usually found like joy within my relationship with my husband. And it was that constant questioning of, do I love him? Am I sure I love him? Like, and it was just silly stuff like that, that like one part of my brain was like, 100%, like, no doubt. But it was my OCD grabbed like hold on that so hard. And obviously, because I do, he's someone I value in my life, and I love him dearly. And my OCD's always gone after, like everybody else, the things that I value. But that was the one that pushed me to like really go back and try to find help. Cause it took me out. I mean, I found myself crying a lot for no reason. I didn't know why. My brain was all over the place with that one. And I also had like, years and years worth of OCD that hadn't even been treated at that point. So it was just like this accumulation of everything. But after that, as I was struggling with that, you know, my husband and I were like, you need to get some help. and I tried a few places and people didn't know how to treat it. They didn't recognize that relationship OCD was really a thing. So I kind of was like, that put me off, because then I got nervous about it. And finally, you know, luckily where I live in Maryland, there's a few like OCD specialists, but I found someone and it since then it changed my life in ways that I can't even describe. Like it, you know, I was someone that didn't know I had OCD for so long, kind of self-diagnosed, but still struggled through it for years and years and years. And then hit a breaking point. And then I found this therapist that, you know, I went to, and the first time I was there, you know, in my brain, I kind of had framed it like, this is the last time I'm going to try. Like this guy doesn't work. And I'm like, I'm out. Like there's no hope for me. And I think and I said this on Kimberly Quinlan's podcast, like the first day I went and then I left, I was thinking, man, this person gets it. Like I felt so validated in terms of, you know, what I had experienced, how painful it was, and just, I could tell that he knew how my brain worked. And there was this, it took so much shame out of it for me. And I quickly felt like I was in the right place, to tackle my OCD. And since then, that was almost like 4 years ago now, I've gradually been working on theme after theme. And it's been a journey. And I think, you know, we do ERP and CBT, and it's really changed my life. And I think right from the get go, I mean, we jumped in to some heavy stuff with like the harm OCD that I never dealt with as a child. Like I was, you know, almost 30 years old and I was still avoiding things that I started avoiding when I was 12. You know, I wasn't watching the news. I couldn't read news stories that were violent. I didn't watch shows with my husband. I, you know, avoided anything to do with a weapon, even just like looking at pictures or using knives sometimes. And we worked hard on that. And that was really hard for me. I mean, at that point, when I first started with ERP with that, you know, if my therapist said the word Columbine, I just wanted to run out of the room. Like I had avoided so much related to that content that word just invoked like this sense of fear in me that I had such a hard time sitting with. I think like my first assignment with that was literally to just write that word once a day or something like that, and then we progressed to like way beyond that, and now I'm to the point that I obviously can openly talk about it, and I, you know, can watch shows and do all sorts of things, but anyway, so like my journey in therapy is just, we've just gone after thing that hasn't been addressed over the years. Yeah. And the big one was also, I was a little afraid to get pregnant, just knowing I had OCD and what it had taken from me in the years prior and how that would attack the pregnancy and my daughter. So we worked really hard to get me to a place where I could identify that was something I valued in my life. And that it wasn't something I wanted my OCD to steal from me. And I really worked hard with the ERP on that, just to have the mindset where I was okay with trying to have kids. And then eventually worked through the ERP while I was pregnant. And then after I had my daughter, and I still do plenty of ERP to that. So that was the other big thing that I have worked on the last few years. I don't know. I'm kind of rambling, but there's just so much with my OCD story, and I think it's been just this like empowering journey for me once I found the right help, and it made me realize what I could actually win back and how much a disorder had taken from me that I just had no idea. And it's been a process, and I'll be open about this. Like it has been a lot of up and downs, and it still is. Like this week's been, I might say, a down. but it's just, I mean, words can't express the things I have won back, and So it's kind of a little bit about my journey. So,
well, thank you for going into it and for sharing. So a few questions that came up for me. So I remember you said the first time you went to therapy all those years ago, it wasn't a sort of a joyous part of your week. You weren't necessarily looking forward to it. I guess it's something you maybe felt you had to do. And then the second time, it seemed like it was a much better experience. What kind of changed for you that you the second time were much more willing to be involved with it?
I mean, I think it's a couple things. Like, I think the first time I knew I had OCD, but I didn't know the extent to which it was controlling my life. So I think I was a little naive in terms of like how much therapy I actually needed. And the other piece I think was, I don't think that first therapist was the right fit for me. And I don't even know if this was true or it was just something I was perceiving in my end. It felt like there was like a hesitancy to work on some of the harm related obsessions. Mm. And that might've been just my fear internally. And I might've been projecting that. But I did feel that a little bit. And I think that made me not want to disclose that and work on it in that setting. And I honestly am not sure I was ready to do it either. I think it was so scary to me and so raw that I maybe needed a little more time to get there. And I also think there's something to be said about the type of therapist you're working with. And I think you know that with like, if someone's more focused on ERP, like my current therapist, like OCD specialist, that's what he does. So I knew going in, you know, this guy's probably heard it all. And I'm not gonna be that one that he's like, yeah. And he says that all the time. But I mean, I still get scared of that still sometimes. But I think that did make a difference. And by the time I got to him after those years of not having therapy and after that prior experience, I had read plenty about OCD that I knew kind of like how it works, and knew I wasn't like this anomaly that was, you know, going to be like taken away. So I think that's a little bit why I was probably a little more receptive the second time around.
So. Yeah, no, thank you. That makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, you said the word Columbine initially, just even sort of writing it or seeing the word would have triggered you considerably. And now you've obviously said it like 5 times on the podcast. Yeah. How does it feel for you now saying it?
I mean, most of you wants to tell me that it bothers me right now, but it actually doesn't. Like, it doesn't invoke, I mean, I still think of that word and think of sad things because it's a sad thing that happened. But I don't, I mean, if someone had said that to me in the past, before therapy, I would want to run out of the room. Like, I'd be like, oh no, like earmuffs, like can't hear it, got to get out. Like, and that's just not how it is for me anymore. And I think to speak to that process, like it really was a process for me. And I think it's taken time for me to get there. And I think it wasn't this thing where I was all of a sudden, like, you know, it doesn't bother me anymore. Like once in a while, it'll still get me, you know. Unfortunately, there's still school shootings and I'll see a headline and it will bring up something from that. But I've kind of learned how to like approach that. But there is, you know, it's funny because I actually remember shortly after I started therapy, a few months in, my husband and I were driving, we were going on vacation somewhere, and I was talking about therapy with him, and I just said the word in the car, and I remember thinking, that didn't bother me, like I just talked about this, like, as if it was, like, a conversation, and it was this really cool moment for me where I realized, like, what ERP could do for me. That I was just having this like matter of fact conversation with my husband about what I've been working on in therapy. And in that moment, I feel like I clearly remember it too. Like I feel like we were driving over a bridge, like over the Chesapeake Bay. I realized, hey, that doesn't bother me anymore. And it was like, it was just such a cool thing because I think ERP can be this scary, terrifying thing sometimes, but eventually it works. And you have to work at it, but there's like these cool moments where you realize like, hey, like that's not a thing for me anymore. So I don't know, kind of went off track on that one.
No, thank you. That beautifully illustrated. And I guess a question that comes to mind is, what would, so let's say someone's, you know, looking to start ERP or is it already started it, what would you have wanted to know before kind of starting therapy?
I would want to know a lot. There's the general concept, which I think was explained to me, but that, like, I think sometimes you, when you do ERP, there's this trick your brain plays where you think you're trying to tell yourself you're doing this to prove yourself it's not going to happen. And I think what you're actually trying to do is prove to yourself you can tolerate whether or not it does happen, like it could or could not happen. And I think it's that reminder that it's not proving. You're not trying to prove something. You're actually just trying to sit with the uncertainty of it. And I think the other thing with ERP is, now I've had people message me about this actually, like how hard it is. And it is hard. Like I think, I'm not going to sugarcoat that. Like ERP is hard. Like it can be hard and it can gut punch you and it can make you cry. Like I've cried through ERP. I've wanted to scream. I've gotten angry. Like it's not supposed to be easy. And some ERP is easier, like it's easier, but that those really hard ones they're hard. And I think when you reach that point, I think, and I still struggle with this sometimes. And I definitely still struggle with this. You know, you're doing it right if you're feeling that. Like, that's the thing. Like, once you get that fear and that uncertainty and you want to run out of the room and you feel like you can't tolerate it, then you're in the right spot. You just have to sit it out and wait it out and sit with that. And, you know, I've had experiences where I've started to do that and then I'm like, oh, no way. I'm out. Like, we're not doing this. But then I've had experiences where I have sat through it and it's been so hard and I've cried and then it dissipates. And the next time you do it, it gets a little bit easier and a little bit easier and a little bit easier. And I think I would tell myself not to be afraid of that. Like, it's okay that it feels hard. I think sometimes for me, there was this judgment for how hard it felt. Like I might've been doing it wrong because it felt that hard. That maybe other OCD sufferers, it didn't feel that hard to them. And I think the other big one for me with ERP is, and I don't know how much this comes up for other people, but it definitely comes up for me, is I often felt shame for having to do it. You know, some of my obsessions were around like chemicals or, I mean, this is still one for me, is bug spray. For some reason, my OCD like, can't let go of bug spray. And every time I went to do ERP for it, it wasn't like I got stuck on the shame piece. Like I shouldn't have to do this. This is embarrassing. Like, you know, and I think for me, when I can let go of the shame, like it's, you know, this is part of my disorder. I need to treat it as ERP and work through it, then it gets a lot easier. And I think the more I learned to not stumble over those emotions, like the shame or being angry that I had to do it in the first place, the easier the ERP got. But that also took me recognizing that I had those emotions. And that has definitely been a part of my process. And it's been a more challenging part of my process to learn to sit with some of that. Or even like some of the ERP, I think, brings up memories of stuff. You know, some of the things I had to do exposure to, we'll take Columbine for an example. It made me think of that time as a kid, you know, where I didn't know I had OCD and I had to experience these things that I didn't know what they were. I just thought I was a bad person. So it's learning to kind of set that aside and still do the ERP. And I think for me, that has been a challenge sometimes, because I think when you have untreated OCD, there are memories and there's things that you remember from your past in the process naturally, because you're being exposed to what you're afraid of. And I think for me, I mean, this is a little off what you said, off top of what you said, but I think one challenge has been, you know, it's, you know, you always feel great when you get a, I mean, you don't feel great when you get a diagnosis, but with OCD, there's some type of relief when you get a diagnosis. But getting a diagnosis doesn't erase, you know, however many years before that you didn't have a diagnosis and you experienced your world in a way that you just thought you were a horrible human or whatever your OCD is telling you. So I think for me, it's also been this delicate balance of being kind to that person and also pushing my current self to do exposure to what I need to be doing exposure to. So.
Yeah, no, very good point. Thank you for sharing that. And with relationship OCD, what were, if you don't mind sharing, what were some of the exposures you did for that?
So I'm trying to think back, so it was the beginning. It was a lot of really just living my life the way that I wanted to live my life with my husband. I think, you know, when my OCD was at the worst, like right before I got help, I would sit on the couch next to my husband. You know, he'd be like watching a show and be so into it. And I would just be like on another planet, like, just thinking through my thoughts of like how I felt, like, what did that mean? Like trying to make sense of everything. And it was just like a constant cycle. So I think when I first started therapy, it was a lot of, I'm trying to think what direct exposures we had, of doing things like that, like sitting on the couch with my husband and just thinking, trying to focus on the show and just doing exposure to like, yeah, I may or may not love him, but I'm still going to watch this show and I'm going to enjoy it. Or that kind of stuff. Or going out to eat and going to like a romantic restaurant, even though I was like afraid that that would make me worried about something. It was just doing a lot of direct exposures to how I wanted to live my life and how I had lived my life prior to that obsession coming up. For me, that obsession was a lot of rumination and worrying about things that were just a constant, you know, OCD just goes after you. It's like a constant berating of like, what did that mean? Are you sure you think that? Are you sure you feel that? And it was just acknowledging that those feelings were there and still engaging in what I was doing. So there wasn't a lot of like, I think there might have been some scripting about like what I was afraid of, but I'm trying to think back. That one was a little while ago. Most of it was just focusing on things that I would have liked to do and trying to not get caught in that thought cycle, labeling it and moving on to whatever we were doing, no matter how I was feeling.
So going out, the exposure, for example, in the restaurant is you want to go out for dinner. But then when you start doing the compulsion of like mentally reviewing and ruminating, then bring your attention back to the present moment. Okay. And did you get your husband involved at all in any of the exposures? Not necessarily just around relationship OCD, but just any?
You know, my husband's been like an incredible help for me. I mean, I think he was the reason I actually got help. I mean, I think he really pushed me for that. Unfortunately, my OCD then went after him. The relationship OCD kind of like got in my head, and I think initially, like, and this is the tricky thing about OCD, like I was at such a low point that I was to the point where I was like confessing things to him, things that I didn't want to say to him, but I was so confused that it just was like spilling out of my mouth. And you know, when I went to therapy, my therapist was like, stop, like, just don't say anything. And so my husband has always been a help. I think he's, in terms of like direct exposures, I mean, with the relationship OCD exposures, some of them for me were not telling him things. So it was an exposure not to confess something or not to say something, that I might be questioning in my head. And he was just directly a part of a lot of exposures because it was just doing things we usually did as a couple. In terms of other exposures, you know, he a lot of times he was there with me doing them, but it was more just as there was like that emotional support component sometimes. But his biggest role that he's played for me is, you know, he's had a couple sessions with my therapist of learning how to deal with, I shouldn't say deal with me, but that's how it feels sometimes. And he's just kind of held his ground on the reassurance and, yeah. And not, you know, helping me dig a bigger hole for myself. And, you know, I think it can't be understated the role that spouses or family members play in this disorder. And I often think I don't know how they do it, because, you know, when an OCD sufferer is suffering so badly, I mean, it's hard to watch and it's hard not to be that person that rescues them. So he's kind of played that role for me. And I think that's where he really helped pull me out of a lot of things early on that I did seek reassurance for. And him just knowing like how to respond to that, how not to respond to that, how to insert humor when I needed a little humor and, you know, and I think that's the biggest role that he's played is learning how to be the non-reassurance provider. And then also just being someone that's there that can acknowledge how hard it is sometimes, even though he doesn't know, you know, at the core how hard it is for an OCD sufferer. He, you know, just validates that experience sometimes. So.
Yeah. No, thank you. That's great to hear. And did he ever share kind of, if he found it really hard not to reassure you, or because as you said, it's, you naturally want to reassure and give comfort because that's the human thing to do, it seems like, but yeah. Obviously with OCD it's not as simple as that.
I mean, I don't know if he's ever directly said that, but I would imagine that he would say that. Like, I think I went downstairs and asked him right now, he'd probably say yeah. But yeah, I mean I think that is really hard. And I think there have been times that, you know, he has given in and he can't see me suffer with something. So he'll give me like one reassurance, but then it's like, then he draws the line on the really bad ones. Like, I think sometimes I I've talked about this in therapy, and it sometimes is a rule that we set, like, all right, if I can't handle none, then I get one and then I can't come back for more kind of thing. But I think that is hard. And I think it does take a toll on spouses, especially sometimes, because, you know, they, like I said before, they see you suffering. So I definitely think it has been hard for him at times not to provide that. And I think what has been helpful for him sometimes is, you know, if we start to see me struggling a little bit more, then we try to throw in a session where he goes to therapy with me, or he goes to see my therapist without me. Just to kind of get that like reboot and review of how to best handle some of those situations.
No, thank you for sharing. And then my next question was going to be, other than therapy and obviously the support of your loved ones, is there anything else you do or have done that you find gives you relief, comfort, hope? I don't know, anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a few things. I think, for me, my therapist is big into meditation. And so I kind of had started it before I ended up with therapy, but I was actually thinking about this the other day. Like, when I first did meditation, I literally did it to make myself fall asleep so I didn't have to think my thoughts. Like that was my meditation practice. Like, please fall asleep during this. But as I started to go to therapy, I actually did start to treat meditation differently. And I used it in a more positive way. And it has been like an incredibly helpful thing for me. And I do find, like, you know, 10 minutes a day is just helps keep me on track. And it's a good check-in for me about where I'm at. That's always been helpful. I think the other thing for me, that's played a huge part in my journey, and, you know, some of it's directly related to therapy and some of it's, you know, stuff I've done on the side by myself, is self-compassion kind of work. I think I was just really mean to myself for a very long time. Yeah. And it became very apparent in therapy just how bad it was. And I've really worked hard to kind of, you know, find a kinder voice for myself, the past version of myself and the present version. And I think, you know, enough can be said about that in terms of like, or enough can't be said about that in terms of how important that is. And I think, I had no concept of it before. Like, it was like, it always baffles me that it just wasn't this concept that someone had brought to my attention in like preschool, that it was like okay to be nice to yourself. And it really has, it has changed my life. It's been an incredibly instrumental part of my journey in terms of learning to be kind to myself. And it's a continual process, not always easy, but it's definitely helped me. And I think the other thing is, and this has been like a, this one's been a journey for me in terms of not being isolated with my mental illness. And I think it really has been a process. I think I spent so many years, A, not knowing I had a mental illness. Then I kind of didn't want to talk to anybody about my mental illness. Mm-hmm. And then I only talked to my therapist. And then like it gradually expanded to some of my family members, and my spouse, and the circle's gotten a little bit bigger. But even within that, I struggled probably up until a year or so ago with talking to anybody else that actually had the disorder. Okay. I didn't want to like put myself out there like that. It made me anxious and uncomfortable. And I went to the IOCDF concert, not the concert, kind of like a concert, yeah. Conference, in San Francisco a few years ago. And that was a big turning point for me. I think I just realized that there was a lot of other people out there just like me, whose brains were similar. And it kind of pushed me in the right direction. And since then it's kind of been, I've gradually, you know, been more outspoken about my OCD. I did like a support group within the practice I go to. And then I started the blog, and then I kind of have like the Instagram handle as well. And it's gradually, I've just been more willing to talk about it. And I think it's been something that's helped me to connect with other people and other advocates and other sufferers, and just have somebody, even if it's like one or two people, that they get it on a level that, you know, your spouse can't get it or your parents can't get it.
Yeah.
That's really just been a huge part of me taking the steps I need in my journey. So.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing that. And how's the support group been?
So I'm not currently in it, but I did do it for about, I think about a year. And that was a process like everything else. I mean, I was anxious to go. I wasn't sure if I would talk. And it kind of started with me just sitting and listening and not saying anything. And then I kind of broke out of my shell a little bit and got more comfortable with it. And it was incredibly helpful. And I think it's a great thing for anybody. And I think no matter where you are in your journey, if you're just starting, if you know, that's the type of therapy you can afford at this time, it's a good experience to be surrounded by people that understand. And it gives you a different perspective on it. And sometimes it gets you out of your own head and lets you see, how other people's brains are working too.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing. And, with the self-compassion, I appreciate you bringing that up. And yeah, the fact, you know, if I think back to my childhood, I can't speak for schools now, but back then, I don't really remember anyone ever saying, "Are you being nice to yourself?" It was always, you know, make sure you're nice to other kids and all of this, and which is important. But
you
imagine what a difference potentially it could make to many kids if they're told, "Oh, I need to think about how I'm speaking to myself." You know, it's a whole new concept. So I appreciate you talking about that, and almost now trying to be kind to that younger self that went through all of that.
That's been huge. And I think, you know, I never thought I was like mad at that version of myself that didn't ask for help. And I still don't think I was ever angry about it, but there was, there did become a point where I had to like kind of take that version of my head by the hand and like bring it with me. So I wasn't kind of stuck in that place of thinking about the past so much. And being kind to that version of me that didn't know what was happening, and the way I engaged in behaviors because of that. And I think it's hard sometimes when you know now the disorder you have to think back on that version and be like, well, why didn't I do that? But you know, not knowing you have OCD is one of the scariest things ever. And I think if at any point in your life, no matter how long you are in that place, you got to give some compassion to that version of yourself, because there's no words. I mean, sometimes when I think about it, I cry, because it's sad. And it, you know, I think about myself as that child being that young and the things that were going through my head. And I think, oh man, like someone give that kid a hug. She has no idea how brave she is, and she's telling herself she's horrible right now. So I just think that compassion always has to be a part of an OCD sufferer's journey. So. Mm.
No, that's wonderful. Thank you. Yep. And then, so just words of hope. So anything you want to say to the listeners?
I think, and I always try to speak to this a little bit, is OCD is such a hard disorder. And I think it takes so much from you for so long. I think sometimes the expectation is you're going to start therapy and you're just going to go up and you're going to find this like place that everything is perfect. And that hasn't been my experience, and that hasn't been a lot of people's experience that I talk to. And I think there are going to be ups and downs. And I think when you have the downs, it's just know that there's going to be an up too. And I think you have to keep going in the direction that you feel is right. And I think for me sometimes, I actually feel like I kind of want to be open about this right now, is, you know, this week has been really hard for me. I had a much harder mental health week than I have in a very long time. And it took me a lot to get to a place today that I was, you know, ready to be on a podcast and talk and articulate myself. And it took some meditation. It took some being outside. It took communicating with therapists. And I think, you know, sometimes people talk to me and they talk to me as if I'm like recovered, and I don't see it like that. Like, I think I'm still a work in progress, and I think I will be a work in progress for quite some time. And I think just don't get caught up too much in those periods where you get stuck a little bit. Cause I think OCD is tricky, and it takes a while to really like use your skills effectively all the time. And I know for me, what's been so important is, and this happened today for me, is a little bit of self-honesty with myself in terms of why I'm stuck. And I think it's a hard place sometimes, especially when you've been in therapy for so long, and to find yourself really struggling again. But I think when I can look at myself and say, you know, why am I struggling? Like, what am I not doing? What do I need to do better? And look at it from a non-judgmental place of, yeah, I'm struggling with this and I can do this better, but I don't need to hate myself for it. Then I always kind of pick myself up and head in the right direction again. And I just think that self-reflection sometimes is so important with OCD, because it can take you out, and it sneaks in and it gets you sometimes. And I know for me, and I can't speak for other people, but usually in those moments I struggle, and then I remember, oh yeah, I can do this, and I can look myself in the mirror and know what I need to do and how hard it is, but it's something I have to do. And then I usually take a leap forward. And I think just remembering that, you know, it is hard. Give yourself some credit, because it is really, really hard. But there's plenty of hope, and there's things I've won back in my life the last few years that I never would have thought I would have gotten back. And I've seen joy in places I just didn't see it in before. And, you know, life is better, even though I still struggle. It's a million times better than it was. Yeah. So long-winded version.
It's all good. Well, I'm glad you made it on today. So the next question is, if you could pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old Katie, what would you tell her?
To Google the IOCDF website and read a lot. I probably would tell her that, actually, so she could get a diagnosis a little quicker. But I think, I would tell that version of myself a lot of things, but I think first off that she's going to be okay. I think at that point I had struggled, but I was in for some rough years ahead after that. That she's going to be okay. And I think that those moments that are so hard, she'll find her way. And there's people out there that understand, there's people that can help, and to lean into the discomfort every step of the way. And, you know, there's going to be an empowering journey on the other side of it. Even through those moments, and to always remember to let the joy in. Cause I think sometimes when you're stuck in an OCD world, you forget that you're allowed to be happy and you're allowed to be joyful even when you're struggling. And I think that's something that version of myself really needed to know, in terms of, hey, even if you're feeling anxious, you can still be happy that this thing just happened, or the sun's out, or that this person made you laugh. And this is something my therapist always says to me, that it always gets me, and it always turns my mindset, and I'm not really sure why, but he always says, don't flee from yourself. And I think I would tell that person not to flee from themselves, because I think they're in for a journey, and don't run away, because it's a hard one, but it's a good one. So.
Yeah. No, thank you for sharing. I love that. Yep. I've never heard that before. I will be using it a lot. So next question is, you've got a billboard near where you live. What do you want written on that billboard?
I mean, this goes back to the self-compassion, and I'm sure somebody on your show has probably already said this, but it's okay to be kind to yourself, always. Mm. I think, you know, I kind of was expecting this question. So I was like thinking about it this week, and I was like, what would I say? You know, I think no matter where I was in life, if I saw that billboard, I'd be like, yeah, it is okay to be kind to myself. Mm. And I think it's just something that people need to hear. Every person in the world needs to hear. It's okay to be kind to yourself. So, that's what I put on there.
Nice. I like it. And then, yeah, lastly, is there anything else you wish you could have said or shared today?
I don't think so. I mean, I think we covered a lot of it. And I just think back to what we said before, I think, you know, there's plenty of hope, and don't give up on yourself, because there's people out there that understand and that can help you. So,
yeah. Perfect. And look, thank you so much for sharing your story. And it's not always easy, but I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
So there you have it. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Thank you to Katie for her time, and to you guys for listening. And don't forget, today's episode is sponsored by NoCD. To find out more about NoCD and their therapy plans, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.